This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
The trip into teaching for me seemed organic. It seemed like something that it made absolute sense for me to do from the beginning. I didn't plan it, but it all seemed to make sense at every phase, at every stage. It was a trip that made sense. I became interested when I was a teenager, really, in the problems of the actor. And how to make the acting better. And I did some high school theater, and I did some high school forensic tournaments, speech tournaments and things. I went to acting school. I went to NYU to School of the Arts, and I did a few years at Circle and Square Theater School as part of my undergrad degree at Tisch, NYU. And I got more and more interested in the problems of the actor. I was really fascinated by the work that we were doing in conservatory, super fascinated, but it was often too mysterious. And it shouldn't have been that mysterious. And I wanted it to get slightly less mysterious, for me anyway. And I kept on working with teachers that meant something to me and whose work I respected and admired. And I started to do coaching for theater companies I was working with. And I started to do, I started to help out actors generally, and I started subbing in for classes, really apprenticing with various teachers and various sub-disciplines, and it just seemed to make sense to keep going on a coaching and teaching road.
Did people always, like, come to you? You know, did you feel like people were asking you, what should I do here? Or, you know, like, did it come from you first? Were you like, oh, I think I should help this person by suggesting this? Or did someone come to you and say, oh my God, how do I even accomplish whatever?
It was a mix. Sometimes people would come to me. Sometimes companies would come to me. Sometimes projects would come to me, and sometimes actors would come to me. And sometimes I would go to people. I was maybe, I'm not going to say at my most annoying, but I was pretty annoying in college. Every once in a while, I would know exactly how to help somebody, and I would let them know that in a very, very excited way. sometimes they were in the mood to hear that, and sometimes they were not. And it took me a little bit longer to discover some things about when might be the right moment to offer up my opinion about something, and when might not be.
Did you start doing some subbing and apprenticeship stuff, like teaching? Was that at Circle in the Square, or was that at Tisch?
It was both. I graduated from Tisch, and I was doing a lot of work with downtown Shakespeare companies and stuff, and the occasional commercial or TV gig. I was the occasional film audition and stuff like that. A little bit of voiceover stuff, beginner stuff. But I was sort of creeping into the industry from school. I got my equity card for a show that I did while I was in my last year at NYU. And I had a day job the summer that I the summer right after I graduated. I had a day job in the marketing and subscriptions department at Circle and Square, cause they had one back then. And, that was a day job. And then it came to my attention that there was an opening on the school staff. As the assistant to the director, the administrative assistant to the director of the school, a school which I had only just recently graduated from. And that struck me as a much better day job. So I took that day job and I spent quite a long time there. I was the assistant to the director of the school, and eventually I became the associate director of the school, which is kind of like vice principal. Uh-huh. And while I was there, I was learning a lot about a whole lot of things. I was in faculty meetings and auditioning people again in school, and I was taking advantage of all of the opportunities to work with some teachers that I dug. And I was subbing in for classes and all of that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I started teaching more and more stuff. And I was also working with a bunch of interesting people outside Circle in the Square, but that was my day job for a bit. And
so funny that your day job was like in a theater.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. 50th and Broadway, the basement, the dungeon. Yeah.
Still, you were in the biz.
Yeah. And a lot of my time was spent in the bowels of the Broadway theater there. And I would do various gigs and sometimes take time off to do gigs and sometimes fit gigs in around my day job schedule. And yeah, teaching more and more, and then eventually I was just about ready to leave that place because I needed a change, and I got a gig at NYU itself. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse to come in and administer some of their training programs. And they were putting more and more programs in-house. They used to farm out their students to a number of different conservatories around town, and they were starting to create more in-house programs. And so I had a new day job administering a bunch of those programs, trying to make the conservatory tracks run smoothly. And that was fascinating for a short time. I did not finish out my contract, even though I should have.
Well, sure.
I left early. I left early that gig, and I annoyed a number of people because they were relying on me to do some things in the last couple of months of my gig there.
Sure, but you know, I mean, I could see you not wanting to be in administration if you wanted to be focused on creative stuff. Is that what happened?
Right. And, but, well, I was trucking along just fine with my balancing of everything, I guess. And then I got a phone call. I got offered the chance to go to Hollywood and coach a movie.
Oh.
So I said yes.
How did you have that connection?
One of my teachers knew that I was doing a lot of coaching and teaching, and we had enjoyed working with each other when I was a student, and somebody that I trusted and had studied with for a while, he was a coach to a movie star, and he couldn't do the gig in question for some reason. He was booked, he was busy, but the gig needed to be done. The movie star had to be coached. And so the movie star said, well, who could I get? And my teacher said, well, call Ken. And so I got the call, and that was the end of my day jobbing. And since then, that was like, well, I don't know if I want to say what year it was. It was a long time ago because I'm secretly old.
We're all secretly old. It's okay. You can just say in the past or like in the aughts or the 90s, whatever. Yeah. It's fine.
Right. it was in the 90s, and that was the last time I had a day job. And since then, I've been a full-time acting coach and acting teacher, and sometime, depending on the year, depending on what was happening, performer myself, actor or director or singer sometimes, and that kind of thing.
Still perform and stuff now?
I don't chase gigs.
But occasionally.
So that means that I don't work very often. I decided a long time ago that I didn't want to do junk.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do projects that I really didn't want to do. And so that's cool, but it does mean that you work a lot less. And I was having a ball, teaching and coaching. And it's not like waiting tables. It's not like temping in an office. My day since the 90s has been full of art all the time. I'm extraordinarily lucky. I'm unbelievably lucky. It doesn't mean things aren't hard sometimes. It doesn't mean things aren't hard often.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
I'm very, very lucky to be able to say that since that time I've been doing exactly what I want to do. I've done some cool gigs as an actor, some, but not as many as the actors that I work with.
Sure. And you find it very fulfilling to help these actors, yeah?
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
It's my thing. It's my jam. Yeah.
Yeah, it's your jam.
I don't know. It might sound weird. But
no, I dig it. I love it too.
There is, to me, there is really not much of a difference for my own personal experience, teaching or coaching and being in a thing. Don't get me wrong. I love being in the thing. And when somebody calls me up and says, hey, do you want to be in this thing? I often have a very difficult time saying no, because usually they're calling me up because they are sure and they're right that I actually do want to do it. Because it's super fun, but I don't feel the need to A, be in something all the time as an actor. A lot of actors do, and B, I don't feel the need to be famous as an actor, particularly.
Sure,
it's. That would be swell, but I don't need it. I don't crave it in a way that some actors do, I think.
Yeah.
To me, the problem solving is where it's at, and the investigation into what makes good acting technique and good actor training, and what makes actors better, what makes acting necessary, possible, and cool. That is how I want to spend my day. And if I spend my day as a performer doing some of that, then that's great. And if I spend my day as a helper, then that's also great.
How have you developed your, like, style? Like, you know, certainly when you first began to assist other people's classes, you know, you're just watching them and helping out. But how did you read books, or was it like something, because you started so young, you know, already coaching other people and also, you know, people being confident that you could help them. Did you always have a feeling of what you were going to teach? Like, meaning, like, did you always have a style in mind, or has it changed over time, or I guess both?
My style grew organically, and I didn't set out to develop a particular approach. It grew from working with lots of very, very different kinds of artists. And hearing them complain about each other, and hearing actors concerns about one approach or another. And yeah, I read a lot of books, and I saw lots and lots and lots of people teach and coach lots and lots of different things in lots and lots of different places. And I saw good teachers and bad teachers, and I saw medium teachers, teachers who meant well but didn't really know too much what to do. I saw teachers who were brilliant and who were national treasures. And I was trying to fill the holes. Often. I was trying to give people what I saw they weren't getting from whoever else they were working with. That was a common thread, I think, through a lot of it. I was trying to give them what I knew they needed that no one else would provide.
How did you know they needed it?
Well, sometimes they would say it.
All right.
They were self-aware enough and aware enough of what was happening to them that they would know what they needed, and they would ask for it, or I would guess correctly. But I really enjoyed analyzing the situation. I really enjoyed looking at the relationship between a project, a director, and an actor, or a class and a group of actors, or a school, a program, an approach, and a bunch of acting instruments. I really enjoyed right away the process of breaking down what tends to work, what tends not to work, what is actually helping people, what's not helping people, what's present and working, what's missing. It's my favorite stuff, which makes me some kind of weird acting coach, nerd, wonk person. I don't know.
No, it sounds wonderful. I like that, you know, it's that you're so deeply excited by creating proper techniques for people, and like that the challenge of helping a person get over that hurdle. I mean, that's really great. I mean, people are putting up performances all the time, and I'm sure they're having a hard time, or, you know, they hit a wall like we were talking about earlier. You know, there's a lot of creative blocks. You go up and down. I mean, I'm mostly talking to writers when I'm talking about blocks most of the time. But I mean, as an actor who has to like create a character, especially those who I often think about actors like Mariska Hargitay, for instance, who has to play the same character and has had to play the same character. Not like, oh, it's so sad for her, but like, you know, she's played one character for like 20 years. Like, how much joy is she getting out of Olivia? Like, you know, she's like, okay, well, I guess I'm upset again. You know,
well, she I certainly can't speak for her, but my observation of where she's at, just from, you know, paying attention to the TV every once in a while, is that she found some real deep meaning for herself in doing that particular role of that particular show. She's been very active, I think, in causes related to the subject matter. And trying to do some, good in her community and in her world, given the platform that she has, the opportunities that she has.
Totally.
And so I admire that very deeply. I think that, I think she's trying to do some things with it. And, you know, that was something that, I guess, strictly speaking, she didn't have to do, but she did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she certainly found a way to, like, really use the platform that she has, like you said, to help people and to, you know, particularly help the people hurt by the crimes her fictional crime show talk about. So, yeah, it's just you think about, you know, people who are on these shows, because some of them are just, like I said, like they're on for like 20 years. Like, are you kidding me? And it's just wild. Like, she's got to hit a wall occasionally. Yeah. Where she's like, what? Oh, God, I can't do this again. Like, okay, how do I get through this scene? Let's do this, you know? I mean, she's a human.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, well, which brings us to acting, whether you're doing it for amateur performances or whether you're doing big gigs, acting is athletic. It is the work of an athlete, and just like any athlete, you get tired, and you might have some pretty good stats, but you sometimes are going to lose a game.
And yeah.
Sometimes you're not going to make the goals that you set for yourself. But but just as with athletes, you might need a coach.
Yeah.
It's weird that Olympic athletes would never dream of doing their thing without a coach working with them the whole way through. But actors sometimes are not thinking of it that way. I think because of the nature of acting, it is something that involves a lot of natural processes and a lot of things that are easy. And even though putting them together is often quite difficult, it involves a lot of things that are quite easy. And so people tend not to think of it as athletic. They tend to think of it as just something to go and do. But that's sometimes the case. But if you really want to do it well, really consistently, then it is usually helpful to have somebody who really knows what they're doing help you through.
Hmm. Do you, just to continue the analogy of Olympic athletes to actors, are there, I guess, in the analogy, I guess say like Hollywood people would be the Olympic athletes, because it's like there's lots of athletes that do what the Olympic athletes do. They just happen to get the big stage in this moment, which I guess is the same as a Hollywood actor. Like, they're just doing the same thing. They just happen to get their face out there. Do you know, like, are there people... Yeah. I guess, I mean, this is a weird question, because how would you know the answer to this question? But I guess let's just discuss the idea of, like, people in Hollywood not, because you just mentioned, like, some actors don't have any coaches. Like, are there famous people that don't have coaches? Because right.
Lots of actors don't have. Oh, yeah. Lots of famous people don't have coaches.
Wow, that's so interesting.
I wish more of them did, you know, of course.
You'd think their agents and managers and the whole team or whatever would insist upon it.
Well, yeah, you would. Sometimes they do. But really, you know, sometimes they don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, there are, it is like being an Olympic athlete a lot, but it's not like being an Olympic athlete all the way at every point of comparison. And it really is possible to do a great job acting without a great coach. But, you know,
your discipline has got to be intense, though, if you're doing it without a coach. I mean, like, I'm always talking about how, you know, people will be like, oh, Beyonce's so gorgeous. How does she stay so gorgeous after she had her baby? It's like, well, because the nannies took the babies away and somebody made her get on a treadmill immediately. Like, that's what happened.
Yeah, sure.
Like, she didn't, like, hang out and watch TV like the rest of us. Like, no.
Yeah. Listen, Meryl Streep started out, she had acting problems just like everybody else, but she gained with early success. She gained the time to practice.
Yeah.
And that's something that actors, when they're starting out, don't have a lot of. And also, it's a lot easier to practice when people are bringing you sandwiches. It's a lot easier. You got actors in all of the major markets who are on grueling day job and night job shifts and fitting in art where they possibly can, when they possibly can. But it's incredibly difficult, unbelievably, and tons of them just don't have money for a coach. And it can be rough. Also, there's a whole other thing about a lot of coaches are not good. So there's that.
Yeah, there's a lot of charlatans in the world trying to take advantage of people, especially starlets trying to get themselves famous in various cities. Yeah, it's a darn shame.
And there is an enormous amount of snake oil in this.
No.
There is con artistry. There is simple, innocent ignorance. There is abuse. There's every kind of sin and mistake and horror that you can imagine in the world of working with actors. It's just, I don't know how people even begin to navigate those decisions about who to work with and whether to trust anybody at all. It's brutal. It's horrible. I find that most actor training, out there is very often ineffective, inefficient, or unsafe. And too often combinations of a few of those things.
Hmm. Do you encounter that with some of the people that you work with? Like they're coming to you off a bad experience?
God, yeah. I spend an enormous part of my day deprogramming people from schools, from programs, from conservatories, from other coaches and teachers and directors and their own voices of insecurity. I spend a lot of my time saying to people who have graduate degrees and things from the big places, you know, that thing that you learned, well, you could do it in about, you know, a tenth the time for about a tenth the discomfort. you could make your work more efficient and more effective and safer.
Yeah.
I'm more and more, I am convinced that although certainly some wonderful work is being done in schools, in conservatories, in grad programs, and stuff like that, I'm convinced that that in the main, a school is not the best way to learn this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
It's hard. You're right. But I think it's hard because these places used to be the locations where, like, the only locations where people could get together and do these creative things. And now, you know, hundreds of years later, after these colleges have been around forever, you know, it's gone by the wayside. And it's suffered the way my, like, theory on the world right now, this is intense, I'm sorry. My, like, theory is that if everyone just did their job, no matter what your job is, just do it. Do it. Do it well. Like, if you're the person who is working the drive-thru at McDonald's, just do it. Just do the right thing. Smile at the people. Great. You've made, like, 20 people's day. Like, just do whatever it is that you have to do. And then people will get it done. I feel like every time I hear about a program or a situation or a theater that goes crumbling, it's because somebody didn't do their job. And, like, you know what? I would say, just to harken back to earlier in your story, that it is actually better that you left that school when you needed to go, because you were at least honest with them said, like, I'm not going to give you what you need. So I need to get out of this situation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So many people are just, especially too, because, like, certainly in the world in general, but definitely in the theater world, there, the jobs that feel secure are few and far between. So when you start working for, like, a college, I'm sure you're like, excellent, I'm never leaving this place. And it, you know, people can get jaded super fast. And then be jerks, not making sure, like, you're right, like, not making sure the work that the kids are doing, and kids, sorry, but they're in college, I can call them kids, you know, like, people, the college kids that are coming in to learn, you know, they're trusting you to do what you said you were going to do. Like, I'm an amazing art conservatory, I'm going to make sure that by the time you leave, you know how to direct and act and light design and all the things, like, but they're not doing it.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Have you ever truly met a master of fine art? You know, there's something so silly about it. You know, there's the notion that you will know everything that there is to know in the space of 2 years, 3 years, is crazy. But if you are, an actor, a young actor, wanting a golden ticket, and especially if you are a young actor's parents who are used to other fields in which, school really is the ticket, then a school that says we're the ticket, that's very tempting. Very, very, very tempting.
Yeah.
Now I believe that the best way to learn, this kind of art anyway, maybe any art, is apprenticeship.
Yeah.
The idea is that you want to find the person or find the people who are doing the work that you know or suspect you want to do, and then stick to them like glue as much as you can, until you tire of each other. and the idea of a school, of a conservatory, I think, is that, hey, we have conveniently gathered all of these people. We know who those people are for you. And we have conveniently gathered them all together in one place, for the low, low price of, for a limited amount of time, and you get a showcase and also a t-shirt. And wow, that's pretty great. That sounds awesome. It sounds terrific. But unfortunately, it is only very, very, very occasionally, and really not as much anymore, the actual case.
Yeah. Not to mention the fact that it's kind of few and far between that people are really using their connections from college to move forward anyway. I mean, it sometimes, occasionally, yeah, I'll hear it'll establish a nice base. You know, they'll get on a gig because they're like, oh, you went to NYU? I went to NYU. You know, or something like that. But I don't know.
There are good connections. There are good connections. Some of these places are really good country clubs. They're terrific country clubs. And by the way, I just want to be clear. I'm not suggesting that good art is not happening in them. But I am suggesting
some places, sure,
that it's pretty. It's much rarer than it should be. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I keep finding that out when I talk to people too about like where they went to college, and they'll be like, "Oh, I went to this place, but they taught me this ridiculous thing," and you're like, "What?" You know, it's like, okay, well, yeah, good to know. Yeah. Next time I'm talking to somebody who wants a theater major, yeah, tell them not to go there.
Right. I used to say, well, if you're going to go to college, or if you're going to go to grad school for acting or a conservatory, make it one of these 10 places.
Yeah.
And none of the others. And then as the years went on, that number dwindled. It came down to 8 places, or no, it has to be one of these 5 or 6 places. Oh, it's got to be only one of these 3 places. And then I finally just stopped recommending schools because I was really distressed at some of the things that were going on in them.
Yeah.
But of course, if you are faculty at these places, well, you can't afford to rock the boat.
Yeah.
You can't afford to say, hey, maybe this whole program is not what people need. You can't do that because you have children and houses and things, and you have to live. There's no super incentive once you're in that position to do anything radically different.
Yeah, money can be a prison of its own.
Yeah. 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 I'm not suggesting, by the way, that there's a ton of crookedness. I'm suggesting that it's natural forces that work on people.
I'll suggest it.
Or not. Yeah, okay. All right.
I think there's a lot of sinister people in the world, and every day I find out a little bit more. I think that you're right that most people are just ignorant or tired or caught between a rock and a hard place, but I think there's also terrible people. I think there's egomaniacal people. I mean, when we first started talking, I asked you about like why you got into being a teacher, and I know that there's a number of people, you know, who are teachers purely out of the idea, the ego trip of it, of being like, I'm in charge. Oh, you will do what I tell you to do. Yeah. Like, ooh, that's not okay.
And I'm not going to kid you. I have a tremendous ego.
Oh, sure.
I really do.
Oh, sure. Me too. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Right. I take it out for a walk, and, you know, it's a comfort and stuff. But what I hope, what I'm aiming for is that that's never, ever, ever more important than the work itself.
Yeah.
I teach to learn. I teach because I want to know how to do this. I want to know what the answer to this stuff is, and I love it more than I can possibly say. I have in many ways literally given my entire adult life to this, and it's hard. It's really hard. I'm sure you have many, many guests in various fields on the podcast who have sacrificed a lot for artistic careers at every level. It is brutal in the American economy, in the New York or other major media market economies, it's awful. And I feel that my life would be a lot easier if I had a full-time faculty position somewhere. But sure. I don't want it because I truly believe that the best shape for a program of training actors is the shape that I can carve with my own coaching and classes independently. So
you run your classes through the Ken Schatz studio, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have other teachers that work for you, or is it just you?
I have always been just me, but I'm looking into the future, and I'm thinking about growing the studio in a number of interesting ways, and one of them is to look at the possibility of bringing on other teachers to do various things.
Yeah.
That I think is that's in the 5-year plan from here. That's in, somewhere in there.
Sure. I'm sure it's
because
like
there are really. Yeah.
It's not like you'd just pick anybody. You know, they'd have to really wow you.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I'm unbelievably picky. I sometimes will remark, maybe cynically, I don't know. I sometimes will remark that the number of acting teachers that I trust with actors, I could probably count on 2 hands, in the world.
Mm.
Of course, I don't know everybody, so I'm excited to meet some people. But that's the level that we're talking about. I've seen a lot of acting teachers and only a teeny, teeny, teeny handful of really great ones.
Yeah. Are you going to festivals to see these teachers?
Intentionally. I've been doing this stuff a long time and I just encounter people in various situations.
Okay. I just wasn't sure if you were actively regularly taking workshops to kind of see what's out there and make sure that your stuff is the best stuff.
I've been doing it for a long enough time that I'm pretty secure in what I'm putting out there.
Right on.
But that certainly doesn't mean that I can afford to take it for granted.
Sure.
But I get a lot of information about what other people are doing from the people who come to me.
Sure.
A lot of data. And I've taught at a number of schools and a number of conservatories over the years myself, and so I'm seeing people do stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound like there aren't good people out there, but I do want to emphasize that it's really rare.
No, I mean, if you're spending so much of your time, healing the wounds of these people that have been hurt, you would absolutely see the people that are out there as hey, you're hurting my friends. I know, because I'm always putting the Band-Aids on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I
also want to emphasize that I'm not always right either. I make mistakes just like everybody else, and I'm just trying my best. I'm secure in what I'm trying to do.
Sure.
And I believe in my approach, but I try not to take that for granted.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's
really
a tough
like
world.
To be a better acting. Yeah. I would really love to be a better acting coach tomorrow than I was today. Always.
What are you doing to exercise your muscles?
I put in... wait, you mean as an acting coach?
Yeah. That'd be kind of out of left field if it was like, so how are your pecs?
Right. They're all right. I coach a lot. I did some math on this a year or so ago. I was poking around the internet. I think maybe because I was super tired, and I was, you know, looking at my pricing structure and stuff like that. And I wanted to do some research on what other coaches around town were offering and what their schedules were like, what they were doing. And I gathered together a whole lot of data. And it turned out, I don't know that this is still true, but at the time, it turned out that I have been coaching way more hours than most of the other coaches around. Way more. Like, it's not even close. And I kind of like that, but it's a bit weird. What I do is very strange.
Sure.
There are a few different kinds of coaches who work with actors. One kind is faculty members of a school, of a university program, a grad school, or a conservatory. Those folks have full-time or significant hours, part-time gigs, for either one school or several schools, and if they're doing coaching privately, then they're or a class privately, they're doing that on the side, and they do it somewhat. Then there are the trust fund babies, who are super great pals with very, very wealthy celebrity actors, and they will help out the actors. On a lark, you know, they'll simply pick up and go on set with people for a couple months at a time, but they don't really need the work as much. And there are people with their own independent studios, but very, very, very often, I was amazed to find, very, very often, the people with independent acting studios have had those studios paid for by spouses with regular jobs, by the family or other money or super lucky gig money or stuff like that. Not all the time, but more than I thought. And then there are a few people like me, independent acting teachers, independent acting coaches, who simply do that. And it's weird. I work all the time. Tomorrow...
Sounds like you have to.
Let's see. Well, yeah. You know, the thing
about
freelance
lifestyle
is that... it's the freelance world. I could only work with a few clients who could afford to pay, but I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
My first big years as a coach, I was coaching a lot of movies. I was going out of town a lot, and I was on set, and I was prepping big name actors for projects and things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was groovy, but I wanted to develop my own craft work with a regular class in New York, and I didn't want to be beholden to only a couple of clients, only a few clients. So I've been spending a lot of time coaching and teaching my own thing, in addition to the occasional bigger project. tomorrow I start coaching at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I stop coaching at 5 o'clock. There's no lunch breaker in there. I'm seeing one actor, two actors, three actors, four actors, five actors. I'm seeing six actors from 10 o'clock to 5 with no break, and then I have a little bit of a break, and then I'm going to dash over to the other studio space that I use and teach a four-hour class from 6:30 to 10:30.
Whoa.
And that's pretty typical.
Yeah.
Pretty typical.
Are you, like, taking cabs around from place to place as you do all these different meetings?
Sometimes.
Are you in one place? You have a location?
There's a studio that I like to rent for coaching by the hour. And mm-hmm. there's a studio that I like to rent for group classes. And okay. they're different. So because they're great for different things, but also because I would go utterly bananas if I had to be doing it all in one building all the time.
Yeah.
And then for very high profile clients, it's house calls. You know?
Sure.
You know, I'll go to somebody's apartment and we'll work privately and something like that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were doing that for everybody. Like if you were just going from apartment to apartment doing stuff, but it's nice that you have like a place
that
place.
That would be insane.
Sure. Yeah, it would be insane, but I know people who do it.
Yeah. I do that for celebrity clients. But generally speaking, I have studios in Midtown that I like to use for coaching and that I like to use for classes.
Cool.
Of that time, I think, all tomorrow, all but one of my coaching hours are in person, but I'm also going to be in the studio, while FaceTiming, with an actor who's stepping into a major role in a show in Middle America someplace. So we'll be doing some FaceTime or Skype or whatever it is.
Wild. Man, that's it's a lot of stuff to juggle, but I think the fact that you really love it, you know, helps keep everything going. You're able to do all the administration part of keeping your schedule and keeping everybody on point, making sure you get paid and everything like that without having to have too big a staff and, you know, yet you're able to keep living your life.
I do have wonderful student assistants that are working for me. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
I have a small squadron of class assistants who keep me sane and who really do an enormous amount of work. And so I'm very grateful to them. Because it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. You were talking when I asked about the other teachers, you said that would maybe be in your 5-year plan. Are there any other things that you have in the horizon, like plans, goals for the future for your work coming up?
Well, it's funny you should ask. I am starting to teach an on-camera class.
Oh, great.
That's new. I've been working with people on camera technique for years and years and years, just as part of our regular classes and coaching. But we're now starting a thing where we have the actual equipment, and people are working on the stuff. Not just hearing me talk about the technique and showing some things, but practicing it under actual bright lights, actually recording with an actual camera setup. And that's new. So, it's not yet on the website. We're just starting that this month, but, it'll go on the website probably within a few weeks. And, you know. that's fun.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. I was actually thinking earlier, and we were talking about like colleges and sort of the deficiencies that can come with, you know, larger institutions, is that I often find from my friends, you know, that colleges try to bite off more than they can chew. Like they try to do live onstage theater, and also it's like they want to do scripted onstage theater. They want to do theater you write yourself, and they want to do film. And it's like, that's a lot of stuff. That's too many things. Pick one of those things. Like, that you can't learn how to be on film and learn how to be on stage at the same time. Like, they're just so different. So different. It's they great are, that you're offering a separate class.
Well, it's true that any of these things takes, how do I want to start that sentence? Let's see. These things take a minute to learn and a lifetime to master, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's also true that people get very hung up on the distinction between acting for camera and acting for, live stage work. And I gotta say, once you have down some principles of technique, as a behavioral artist, as a performer who is vocally and physically and emotionally adept, then the real differences between stage work and film work, they tend to be pretty easy to manage.
Sure.
It's a bigger deal to learn how to act, than it is to worry about the distinction between the stage and the film. Mm. But there are real differences, and so that's why we're doing camera classes.
Yeah. No, but you're right. I mean, it's a technique thing. It's more like fine motor skills than it is, you know, a swath of paint. Like, it's like, okay, can you create a world? Cool. In that world, here are some tiny little things you can do that make this better and make that, you know, tweak for this, tweak for that. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you know, thanks, Ken, so much for chatting with me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I was going to say that most on-camera classes these days are taught by agents and casting directors, which is, if they work. But a lot of the time, people aren't getting actual acting technique there. They're getting audition protocol and etiquette and preferences, you know.
Yes, we need to learn both etiquette and technique.
And yes, wouldn't it be nice if everybody knew both? That's right.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't do stuff. You know, there's like one way to do it, and you know, how do you even accomplish these things? I always have a few friends in my pocket that I can ask when I'm like, oh, wait, I'm being asked to do this thing and I don't know how to do it. Like, hey, what's the order of events here? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, hey, good luck with all the things that you're doing with your studio. And it sounds like, you know, you're in a great place as far as like creating and, you know, having an active creative lifestyle. So, you know, congrats on that. And thank you so much for sharing it with the audience.
Thanks. Sure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.